Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, you don't need me to tell you that the government is coming under increasing pressure to reopen the construction sector on the 5th of April when the next COVID restrictions are to be reviewed. And the construction industry says that the 27 billion euro sector is under threat of being left crippled from the COVID-19 lockdowns and is urging the government to reopen fully. Well, to tell us more about these calls, I'm joined on the line by Michael O'Flynn, Chairman and Chief Executive of the O'Flynn Construction Group. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Claire.
You heard, I'm sure, Minister for Finance Pascal Donoghue there earlier in the programme when I asked him about this. And essentially the message is that they're not keeping any sector closed for the hell of it. There are good reasons behind everything that they're doing.
I did. I actually heard his reference all right. The reality here, Claire, is that construction should never have been closed. It has remained open throughout Europe during the pandemic, except for Ireland. Some very brief periods in March of last year, some countries, but then it has been open since everywhere. And I'm speaking here on the basis we want it open on the basis that it's safe, and the sector has demonstrated this. In fact, the HSE data clearly shows this to be the case. And the incidence of COVID on construction sites is lower than schools or other food companies or whatever.
But they it's not what happens on construction sites. You know, this argument is made continuously by NPHET that it's not what happens in the workplace per se. It's about the congregation outside of that, isn't it? It's about five lads going into a centre for a breakfast roll.
Yeah, I think we're victims of the yellow vest that people have to wear, and this thing about the local shops is hugely exaggerated. Can I just put this in context? The data proves that our industry is safe. I wouldn't be on here with you this morning, Claire, if it wasn't safe. And when the pandemic came, the industry stood back and established a protocol, established a safe operating procedure, and the right safety protocols are in place. And there's no doubt that we can do our business safely.
Yeah, on the sites, Michael, on the sites, but then you have people sharing lifts to and from work. You know, do you accept that there might be a problem around getting to and from work and the breaks and so on?
I can't speak for everyone. I can only speak for the vast majority of the industry. To and from work has been addressed. There are situations where people, more than one person, will be in a car or a van. We cannot legislate that everybody must travel. Not everybody has their own car. But there are procedures in place that people will come and go with masks on. On the shop situation, most people now, in most sites, and I won't say everywhere, don't leave the site during the day. And like, you have to look at the data from our sites. And the data from the industry is really, really strong. Even since January, where you had 40,000 workers operating, you had the highest level of incidence was 56. That's 0.001%. Last year, when it peaked, it was 42 out of 8,000. Like, you know, it was 8,000 cases and we were 42 out of 40,000. Like, you have to accept that we have procedures and we have protocols that work.
And you feel, I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but you feel that the industry is being discriminated against, or that you in particular, your part of the industry is being discriminated against?
Well, look, it does not make sense that we continue to have social housing, and we have other construction for public buildings. Some FDI projects are allowed. How are they safe if our situation isn't safe? The most recent government statutory instrument, it allows this public sector and this public buildings, etc., as distinct to private housing. In my opinion, that is nothing short of discrimination towards the private sector. And like, the government is losing the will of the industry, and there's no question about that. And that's why I'm happy to come on and speak about this. But I would say in a lot of situations...
What do you mean by that? Like, do you mean that there's an increase in the sort of nixers and black economy going
on? No, I mean that our industry have had enough. I mean, there was no justification for extending the lockdown from February until April. We all accepted last March, when this happened first last year, look, we didn't know what we were facing, and we all took our medicine, so to speak. But in the fall of last year, we had fantastic record. How could that be ignored? After Christmas, there was chaos. And again, we accepted that because nobody knew where this was going. But to extend the lockdown for us in February is having a huge impact on companies. It's having a huge impact on people who have bought houses with mortgages expiring. It's having a huge impact on expiring tenancies. It's actually having a big impact on investors
in the whole
housing market, because Ireland is seen as being different to everywhere else, not just in Europe.
Yeah, but the pandemic is having a huge impact on everybody, Michael, and it's not fair and it's not pleasant and it's extremely difficult. But you know where we were in January and February in this country with the number of cases, the number of people in hospital, the number of people in ICUs. I stood outside the Mater Hospital doing a television programme. It was absolutely frightening to see the streams of ambulances coming in with people suffering from COVID, waiting for hospital admissions.
I completely get that. And I wouldn't be on suggesting, unless we can do it safely. The data is there that proves we have done it safely for the last 12 months. The incidence level is extremely low. I mean, you have to look here at the costs as well. I mean, the housing industry has been through a very, very difficult decade. The number of companies that are operating now are very different to the number of companies that were operating 10 years ago. But we are where we are. The cost on fixed overheads, the cost on these companies is enormous. You have to take that into account. Take, for example, the PUP payments for our industry is 21 million per week. I'm not talking about people who are being kept on by the companies, but people who work on sites. That's 21 million a week. And the direct tax loss to the Exchequer is 32 million per week.
Mm-hmm.
That's a difference of 53 million. I'm not saying that finance takes any preference or precedence over the pandemic. I am saying we can work safely. We have proved we can work safely. Why are we being singled out as an industry?
And what sort of indication are you getting, though, about what might happen on the 5th of April?
Well, you know, we absolutely thought after the first 6 weeks in January, February, that we were going to get back, because even during that period, we proved that we can operate safely.
But I think the minister did too, to be fair, because he more or less said it here that he hoped you'd be back at the start of March, but it didn't come to pass.
Yeah, but this is the question. Why did it come to pass? And why was our industry... Like, you have to look... Why is some of the sector able to open and the rest can't? That does not make any sense. Because if it's safe for them to operate, it's safe for us to operate. There is no logic to saying that the public sector buildings and housing can operate and the private can't. We have people, Claire, who have mortgages expiring. A three-month close-down is enormous in a house construction situation. Mm-hmm. How can people recover that position? These are people who have saved hard to have a mortgage. And all we are doing here is adding to a housing crisis that is the worst in Europe. We are finding a way to make it actually more a bigger crisis than what it needs to be. And I have no doubt about it. It's the right decision for the economy to open up. It's the right decision for those people who want to live in homes. And we have to face it. We cannot risk this being continued again. And that's why, as an industry, others involved in the various organisations and people like me, we have to speak out and people have to understand that we're not just being casual about this.
Yeah,
we're
absolutely
genuine about
this. I know you said that your sites are safe and you're saying it again there, but our texters don't agree with you, Michael. I know this is anecdotal, but we're getting a lot of them. The behaviour of construction workers is the theme. We're getting text after text about builders in vans, on sites and in shops, not observing distance and mask wearing regulations. And that's the concern that people have.
But I think there's a perception out there, and there's a very small number. I'm not saying for a moment that this doesn't happen. But if you look, take Cork, for example, and some of the counties, the incidence level is extremely low. I mean, we had regional lockdowns last year. Perhaps we need regional openings. I do not accept that all construction workers are behaving like your texters coming in. I'm sure there are other techs coming in who actually understand the position that I'm outlining. And I have to tell you, the responsibility being taken by the workers on site, coming to site, going from site, that I have experienced in our company, and indeed speaking to other developers, which we all do, we are just baffled by the fact that we have been singled out. Not us, but part of our industry has been singled out. Mm-hmm. And I know people can be highly critical of the LVS Brigade, as we're often called, but that's safety as well, because we are very identifiable. And I think we're being punished for having health and safety second to none. And now our procedure for COVID has been hugely successful. The data should count, and it's not counting for us. And I don't understand why the government isn't accepting the fact.
And tell me, Michael, some of the workforce are leaving altogether, as in they're leaving the country.
That's another issue, and it's a real issue. And I mentioned a few moments ago about the investor community in Ireland are puzzled, and these come from around the world. Why is it different in Ireland to everywhere else? The workforce is a very mobile workforce. A lot of the subcontractors involved, these people were really taken aback, and some have left already to go to the UK and elsewhere. Some of that subcontractor workforce are very transient, and people are now saying, well, if this doesn't open now, what's going to happen? And they're understandably not interested in having the employment or unemployment payment. So you have a knock-on here for the economy. You have a knock-on for society. You have a knock-on in all kinds of areas that has to be factored in making the decision. And we really are taken aback with the decision that was made to extend this. The government know this, but equally, Claire, mm-hmm. they knew in February, 6 weeks into the new year, how low the incidence level was and how important our industry is. Why then would they not have made that decision at that time that, yes, housing, construction is a case, and it's a case that's been recognised and accepted all over the world.
Michael, the other thing I wanted to ask you about is the affordable housing bill and the element in it which has come in for such severe criticism. This is the shared equity housing scheme, which was branded in the Dáil, I know, as a developer's charter, but it hasn't just been criticised in the Dáil. It's also had concerns about it raised by the ESRI, the Central Bank, the former Secretary General at the Department of Public Expenditure, Robert Watt. I mean, do you see it as a developer's charter?
Well, I don't. And I'm surprised by some of those organisations that have come out so strongly. Like, look at the shared equity concept. The simple fact of the matter is there's a whole group of people locked out from buying housing. The shared equity concept allows them to own maybe 3/4 of a house or 80% of a house. And I would put it to you that take the central bank. The macroprudential rules are a massive issue for people who are trying to buy. People are paying enormous sums in rent. They'd be paying much less in a mortgage. Some of them are fortunate enough to get parental or sibling support. That's not the country that we should be operating here. I don't understand the central bank macroprudential rules. The interest rates have dropped since they came in, and they're still holding the line. 3.5 times salary. In England, in North of Ireland, it's 4.5. In parts of Europe, it's actually 5. In Holland, it's 5.2. Like, why? That is one of the causes.
Houses are probably cheaper in those places too, Michael.
No, they're not. No, they're not. And the cost, I mean, to answer your question, the cost of construction in this country is not out of line. Unfortunately, we have VAT and we have other issues. And, you know, people think this is a developer's support, this is more developer's profits. I have said this before, and not everyone in my industry agrees, but I'm going to say it again. We are happy to have certificates of reasonable value like we had 20-something years ago. If people think this is a gravy train and there's too much profits being made, well, let's open our books and let people understand the influencing factor. There is land, planning, densities, contributions. Okay. Like, on this shared equity, Claire, there are price caps, there are income thresholds. This is a consumer support scheme. It will get many, many people able to buy a private house that can't currently do so.
Okay, Michael,
but I think the central bank and other areas need to be looked at carefully.
Okay, we're going to leave it there, but thank you very much for joining us. Michael O'Flynn, Chairman and CEO of the O'Flynn Group.